So what happened last time is I tried to record it on GarageBand as well as on StreamYard. And then what I'd realized is on GarageBand, all it had recorded was my audio and then the audio from the computer of the person that I was interviewing. So I was like, well, that's useless. So I'm pretty sure it comes up on StreamYard. You'd think I'd have a
Yeah, we're
handle
live
on this by
now.
now, but I just make it up. Huh?
We're live now.
We're live now. It's on.
Yeah.
See, this is how casual it is.
Okay. I'm like,
I'm
did you live?
like, is it
Talking
on?
about
Are we
what went
doing
wrong in like
this?
the
We're
previous
doing
podcast.
this.
Okay, we're doing this. Let's do it.
So, guys, this is Paige. Paige and I have been working together for a while, actually. When did we first meet? We didn't meet in person for a long time because Paige lives in Dubbo, and I was living in Brisbane
Brisbane.
when I Brisbane, yeah, Brisbane when I started working with Paige. So, yeah, it was a while before we actually met, and then I
No,
remember you
we
coming to
did. We met
Melbourne.
in purpose when I did my level one.
Oh, what?
I did my level one with you like 7 years, 6 or 7 years ago. And but
Stop!
yeah.
I did
No, this is so
not
embarrassing. But like the first time we ever spoke, because the way the groups work, I didn't actually get a rotation with you. But when you had to do the final exam,
Yep.
like apparently there aren't enough erasers to go around. So if you need an eraser, you have to put your hand up to say, I need a rubber. And I put my hand up before the exam started, and you came over with the rubber, and you're like, it hasn't started yet. And I'm like, I spelt my name wrong.
That's
Yeah.
brilliant. Yeah, we
Yeah.
have like some of the pencils for the level one don't have like
Yeah.
erasers on the end of them. So we have, whatever erasers like any of the trainers people have got, and we just can't hold on to them. And people in the middle of the test have to be like, "Can I please? I made a mistake. I fucked up.
Yeah.
I need to rub something out." That's really funny. Oh my gosh. So was that in Brisbane? Where was that
No, that
seminar?
was in Sydney. That was in Sydney.
That was in Sydney. Yeah. So that would have been at
FX.
CFX. Yeah.
Yeah,
FX,
yeah,
yep.
yeah.
That's awesome. Oh man, way
I
back
thought
in the day.
I'd told you.
Are you level two now? Or are you
No,
level
no, no.
one?
Level one.
Level one. Yeah, okay, nice. Oh, there you go. Awesome. Okay, so
Yeah.
we met on a seminar. Oh man,
Mm-hmm.
good times. I've just done my second seminar for the year. I did level two in Sydney, actually, and it was really good. The seminars are so fucking good.
Yeah.
Okay, so I wanted to get really personal with Paige. Just really get straight to it and pull her right out of her comfort zone. And this is the way it goes. Like, all of the episodes on this podcast are always super personal and super just who cares? We're just going to talk about our lives as if it was just you and I talking, not whoever else wants to listen to this listening. So I wanted to ask Paige about anything that it could be relevant to. So when I talk to Paige, or I'm gonna stop referring to you in person, but when I ask you questions, like it doesn't have to be related to food. It can be anything. And I think that that's what happens as a nutrition coach. People come to us thinking it's like, oh, I'm gonna get coaching on food. And then it turns into everything else. Like we wear so many hats. And that's where we become kind of more effective, I think. If it's people that are struggling with consistency or people that are struggling with whatever their goal is, and they are looking for the food. Sometimes the food is the byproduct of something else going on. It's like the symptom. So, Paige, I want you to tell me about what the worst place that you've been is. Like, what were your dark times? What were the dark ages for Paige Williams?
Wow. Just like, okay. Just get right into it. So, I mean,
We're
I
going
actually,
there.
yeah, we're going, okay, straight up. Okay. I mean, I guess, I mean, if we're not just talking about food, but like just in general, like of course, yeah, been through different things at different times. I guess the thing that I've been thinking about and experienced lately, is I guess in regards to my body image, I think. Like, and then I've been working through some stuff recently, which has made me then go back to previous times where I've struggled with it. And it's not something that I talk about a lot. Like, I don't think I talk about it. I definitely don't talk about it on social media. I don't really talk about it a lot with other people. And to be honest, I always feel a little bit almost guilty or bad talking about it, because I mean, I guess like I do have, I mean, you know, like that thin privilege. I mean, I do have, I mean, my body fluctuates, it changes, but I've always had a very normal body. I've always had, you know, like I've never been shamed for eating food in public or having trouble finding clothes that fit. I've never gone into a doctor's and had them question my weight or habits or lifestyle. So like, I know I'm lucky in a lot of senses, but it's something that I have still struggled with. And when I think about the worst time, it was after I had kids. Like, I had kids when I was quite young. I had Lily when I was 18. So my body changed really quickly. I went from being, you know, pre-pregnancy weighing like, you know, 48 kilos or something crazy. And like, I'm 172 centimeters, so quite tall. Mm. So there's not a lot of room for body fat there. So I think, yeah, so my body changed very quickly, and just having a softer stomach was really hard to deal with. And also being at an age where I was definitely not emotionally equipped to understand or deal with those changes. I think I just remember looking at myself and, oh, like for years, bursting into tears. Like, I avoided having photos taken of myself, like 10 years of my life. There's like almost like a 10-year gap in photos of me, because it would just upset me. And I think, you know, all through my 20s, my relationship with my body, even though, you know, most people would look at it and think, yeah, there's nothing, absolutely nothing wrong with it. And I can look back at it now and say, there is nothing wrong with it. It was really hard. Yeah, that was probably, but I think as well, because I didn't know how to deal with it. Right now, yeah, like 10 years on, I mean, well, no, 20 years on from being 20.
I know. How old is your oldest now?
Lil's 21.
Yeah.
So Lil's 21. But, yeah, like I just think, you know, like getting through to my 30s was when I started dealing with it in a more, in a better way. So now fast forward 10 years and I feel like I'm starting to have some of those struggles again. I think, yeah, like looking back, and even if I look back, you know, one, two, you know, just in recent years, I don't feel like, you know, I'm as lean as I was, or but, and, you know, maybe I don't like my body as much, but I do feel like I'm better equipped to deal with it, I think. So, yeah, definitely struggling a little bit with that at the moment. And I've been, did you know that saying, like, I think we always talk about it in CrossFit, that whole, you know, like, when it comes to body image around women, it's like, you know, we focus on what we can do rather than what we look like, which is I love that message.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I love it. And I've been saying it for years, but I've been recently, you know, just starting to feel like more like it's a little bit simplistic, that I can love being strong, but also love my thin body. I can love the things that I can do, but I can still prefer my body when it had more visible abs, you know, that sort of thing. And even though, you know, like I know better, but I can still have these, I've been having a lot of these conflicting thoughts lately, which have been a challenge.
Yeah, I think as humans, like you, there's no way to shut down or cut off the desire to look a certain way. And I think it's inbuilt. It's like, it's how we attract partners. It's how we keep ourselves like protected and safe and have providers, especially as women, you know, like it's, I just think it's almost in our genes. So it's really interesting that it's like, you've kind of gone through like your 30s where I felt like I've kind of hit my stride in my 30s with like how I feel about my body. And also I think that after 10 years of CrossFit now, my body's kind of settled into this place where I don't see drastic changes. I can definitely feel a little bit bigger at times and I can feel smaller at times, but like I kind of look the same to everybody else. And it's just like, I look like a CrossFitter now, really. So it's funny that like you kind of hit your stride and then you're experiencing like a new phase being close to 40. Do you think that the number plays on your mind? Like, does the number 40 play?
yeah, I'm trying not to let it. I think, yeah, I've definitely got like, again, like, yeah, there's it's so hard because, you know, you can have conflicting realities, right? There can be two different truths. And I think I when it comes to being 40, I'm sort of reconciling like my personal views on I don't give a fuck and age is just a number with, I guess, society's expectations. And
I wanted to ask. Is the feeling of like being wondering about like what you're, I guess it's like being judged on our level of attraction, right? It's like, am I attractive to people? Am I not attractive to people? Do I fit in? What do I look like? Not only relative to other people around me, but relative to my previous self, like my younger self. There's so many different ways that we can fucking judge ourselves and compare ourselves. It becomes impossible. And then internally having to like find some way to resolve that. What do you tell your girls? Like, how have you approached body image with your daughters?
They've both been through like teenage years and their own individual struggles. I mean, I try, and it is really hard. Like, it's a lot different to how you would coach a client, of course. Like, it's not, and you know, you have, because the way that, yeah, like you think about the messages that like, and the way that, you know, your mum spoke to you, it's kind of a different thing. Like, you know, they're not necessarily,
a client's upping it.
They're not necessarily like, what you're saying. I mean, I definitely just try and get them to, you know, just set at like, focus on health and focus on their relationship with their health over their relationship with their body and just valuing that. I guess when it comes to, I mean, particularly like when I look back when I was in my early 20s, I don't think I set the best example. And I do have, you know, I do have some guilt around that, but I think, I've just tried to use that guilt in to set a more positive example now that I know better, because I did the best, like,
yeah,
anything, like, it's, I did almost the best with what I could, but it, looking back now, I'm like, oh yeah, it wasn't good enough, but I can, you know, I can either beat myself up for that.
But they've been able to see all of that, right? Like, they've been able to see you in your 20s and you now in your late 30s. It's like, I almost feel like when I think of my mom and I think of the transformation she's been through from essentially being a 15-year marriage to now being 15 years single, it's like the person that she was when I was a kid is very different to the person that she was now. And it was only in seeing her evolve that I was like, oh, my mom's like a fucking strong person. Like, she can be an asshole if she wants to be. And she was always very much like mama bear energy. So I think it's almost, it could almost be a really positive thing that it's like, hey, you had those struggles and now look at where you are now. Cause we're kind of just setting an example, right? Like, that's the best way that we teach our kids, at least fucking from what I think is how I think. Ask me when I have kids. I'll be like, no, I take it all back.
I mean, I think as far as being, of course you want to set the best example, but you're also human. You're also going to make mistakes and you're also not always going to be the best version of yourself. And I think, and it's just like, with so many things in life, it's about being able to grow through those times and like,
it's like setting the example is the learning from it. Right.
Definitely.
So, I wanted to ask you about, like, I've sent Paige a bunch of questions and it's a bit of a guide, but I want to get into one of these questions, which is, I think, a nice follow-up from where we were just talking about, because when I look at your Instagram and I think of you, and I know that you've just said it's something that you actually struggle with because you have a body that is fit and in shape, and I think we have that, right? Because as much as we all have our own struggles, it's still very easy to say like, hey, well, if someone who's overweight is potentially going to be judged more based on their external appearance than someone who's not overweight. So the struggle of someone who's not overweight is different, but we still struggle. So the follow-up from that question is, you make it look easy. Like, I think when I look at your Instagram, you train consistently, and this is the trap of Instagram. It's just a fucking highlight reel, right? Like, I'm sure people look at my Instagram and think the same thing. So that what I'm trying to get to is, you still put in effort. So what's the reality? Like, I know that you make really good meals. You post really cool, like, you always have like salmon and rice and veg. And then I see like your whatever other dish that you do, like, you do pretty similar little like mixed bowls, which I love. and then you're trained. Like what you do, yeah, what you do every day seems super consistent, and you seem to like be on this pattern of behavior that's just you make it look easy. And my question is it easy, or are you putting in just as much effort as everyone else?
Okay. So yeah, I mean, 100% I put in effort, and like the amount of effort I put in varies, but I don't find it hard to eat well and to train anymore. But I don't think.
Yeah. Anymore is like the key anymore. Word, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like I've spent years not just building, but practicing like my good habits and, you know, learning what works for me, learning how to simplify things, making mistakes, kind of just, yeah, just figuring shit out. And yeah, so now I feel like it's not as far as, like, you know, and there's struggles in it, but when it comes to, I think, training and nutrition, I've built habits that, so it's not like they just become part of who I am now, you know, like, you know, I am someone that trains most days. I don't always want to, but I show up and I always feel better for it. I know enough now to know that if I go and do it, I'm going to feel better. So even on the hard days, that's enough to get me to show up. I mean, I also, yeah. I never skip breakfast. I mean, I never skip any meal. Let's be honest. I can't remember the last time I skipped a meal on purpose. You know, like I eat fruit and veggies where I can. I know I feel better when I cook my own food. So I do that most of the time. I also know, I've learned how to not let my brain go crazy talking shit about myself. Like there's lots of different things that I've learned that I just keep doing repetitively. And now I can, they're just sort of, yeah, I guess like part of my identity. And so they just, yeah, like, and they just, I just roll with them through like the periods of high effort or low effort or like, you know, whatever I'm doing. And I think, yeah, like it's not about, yeah, I think people try and do like their very best all the time, and that's just not realistic. But that doesn't mean you can't do some version at all of the time. Like you can't show up.
I remember sitting down with my old boss at CrossFit Rocks, and I'd been feeling like I was not doing a good job. Like I felt like I was, and it was relevant, specific to coaching, like running classes. And I was like, man, I feel like I'm not delivering very well. I feel like I'm not doing my best, and I don't know what to do about it. And he was like, you know what? I know that I'm doing a good job, and I feel like I'm just doing okay at everything. Like if I'm doing my fucking 100% best at everything, I'm putting myself in the ground. Like I'm burning myself out. And it was the most bizarre advice, and I didn't really get it at the time. But more and more and more now, I'm starting to understand how it applies. And it's like food, training, work, your relationships, like all those things, if you're trying to do 100% on everything, I think it's actually, it ends up not being 100% because it's unsustainable.
Yeah.
And so sometimes the feeling of not doing everything that perfectly or amazingly actually means you're in a really good place, actually means you've kind of struck the balance right. I know a lot of people are like, oh, I think I should be doing more. Like I should be doing more. And that was where I was coming from when I was asking that question. I was like, I'm not doing enough. Like I'm not doing enough and I need to do more. And it's like, hey, you know what? If you're just doing okay, that's okay. That's good. Okay is okay, right? We say like good enough is fucking, it's good enough. Because it's for your whole life. It's not just for this window of time. But yeah, that's so interesting.
You've kind of gotten to this place. I think that's like the key thing. Like it's not just for a week or a month or 12 weeks or whatever long, it's for a lifetime. And then when you look at it over a lifetime, you know, it's going to like, eventually it's going to all balance out. Like, so it's okay when you have, you know, periods where you're super, like, you know, you're doing everything at a higher level than other periods. And you're just more focused on the long-term.
Something. And you drop your expectations, right? Like if you're okay with being okay, then suddenly it's more enjoyable, because if you're only okay with being fucking phenomenal every single day, then on days that it is impossible, which there will be those days, you are all right with just, like you said, dropping the effort, having a day that's a little bit rocky, having a week that's rocky. It's like, it's okay. Like being okay is okay. And it means that I'm not going to be 100%. And you just roll with it a little bit more.
What were the things that you went through?
Sorry, you go.
Oh, no, you go. Sorry, what was it?
And I've got another question, a follow-up question. So what I wanted to know was, obviously,
sorry, Kate,
you're in a
that.
Place now where you've... Oh, can you hear me? I think we've got internet slowing down and making things a little bit clunky. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, got you. Yep.
Okay. Yay. We're on. So now that you've gotten to this place that you're currently at, where you're like, it is kind of easy now because you know how to approach it. You know what the effort required is, and you don't need to necessarily exceed it. What was it that kind of got you to this point? Because obviously that's not how you've always been. So what were all the different phases that you've been through? Like, what are the different diets? What were the different mindsets that you've gone through? And even like that reel you did the other day, that was like the shit that I used to think was right. It's like, are all phases that you've been through. And you said you've made mistakes. So what are the mistakes that you've learned from that's kind of gotten you here?
Oh my God. Okay. I tried to be a runner for years, even though I hated it.
I've
done three half marathons. Yeah.
I had that idea. I need to do cardio.
Yeah, 100%. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to be a runner. I'm going to do I've done the typical, like, avoided carbs. Didn't know why I was avoiding them, but just that I knew I was supposed to avoid them.
Carbs are bad.
At that point in my life, I didn't know why they were bad, but I just knew they were bad. I think I tried and failed the I Quit Sugar Challenge about 10 times. The Whole 30 on repeat for years. I thought that was like that was like the pinnacle of being healthy, was doing Whole 30. But then, yeah, like, I'm also going through all these things, like trying to do all of these more extreme things that I would never do now, but also very happy to reward myself with food for doing them, and then go out and binge drink on weekends if the opportunity presented itself. So, you know, like, I didn't have a great balance, I guess, but I didn't understand that either at the time, I think. But fast forward to now, so that's all stuff that I've gone through, like, that has sort of helped me. I think finding CrossFit, definitely, like so many people, which was massive because, yeah, it did then shift my focus more towards performance and nutrition. Like, I think so many people come to nutrition through CrossFit. Like, I really had no idea before I started CrossFit about anything to do with nutrition. And it just kind of like piqued my interest. And then I would keep digging and digging and learning. And then eventually, building, like getting educated and coming into it as a career, which never my intention really.
Yeah, I think there's like a little shift that happens where prior to doing a sport that requires you to like push your performance, you know, I don't know if you've seen it, there's like a Instagram post where somebody's had this thing float around where it's like, stop dieting and exercising and start eating and training. And it's just like a little shift in we're trying to fuel ourselves and create like a physiological adaptation by lifting heavy weights and finding intensity, rather than like, I'm just trying to lose weight and be skinny and I'm doing everything for that cause. Yeah, CrossFit was a massive shift for me as well, definitely.
Yeah.
So how long was that process? Yeah, like that process of like, when did you find CrossFit? Because you did your level one 7 years ago.
Yeah, like about when I was 30.
Yeah, okay.
So like about 10 years ago.
And so was that basically when you started to make healthier choices? So had you spent like your 20s being like, okay, know this, know that?
My 20s, I had two young kids. They were honestly a bit of a blur. Like, I was just, it was just survival mode, to be honest. And So I was, I was doing the best I could with what I had, like with the knowledge that I had. And then, you know, you'd get little bits of input going, you should, like that, if I run, that's going to be healthy and that's going to make me, that's going to keep me thin, or if I don't have cups. I just get all these like little bits of input, which I just take and roll with without really understanding. And I don't think, it wasn't until I kind of got to CrossFit where I was at a place in my life where I could start to take things in a more, cognizant way. I can understand them and pursue them more, I guess, and start to actually understand what was important to me and what my values were. Like, I don't think, like, until then it was literally just, let's just get through this week, this month, this year.
And I guess I think you spend a good portion of your life making decisions and doing things for the sake of other people. And in motherhood, that's the most extreme version of that, right? Like, you can do it without having kids, where you just do things because you think it's the right way to do things, quote unquote, right way. But man, with motherhood, it's like you have to do things because of other people. Like, that's guiding your every decision of your day. So I think what you just said, where you're like, oh, and then I started doing what felt right for me, like what aligned with my values. It's almost like you had to get through that experience of like fucking doing everything for everyone else. And then you figured out, hey, well, what do I need to do?
Yeah. And then, yeah, realizing like how much of a better version of yourself, how much more you can show up for other people when you do look after yourself in that way as well. Like, I think that was a big lesson. And I mean, you know, I love working with mums. Like, I love, like, it's one of my favorite, you know, like, I love, like, you know, so many different types of clients, but I've definitely got a huge soft spot for working with mums, because they've often, like, so many times, like, the check-in that they do with me and that time during the week, that's the only time that they're spending, like, and, you know, prioritizing themselves. And then I can make them the focus for just a little bit of the week. Like, I'm making them the priority and giving them little things that they can do throughout their week that keeps, you know, for them, because so often, like, of course they're doing stuff for themselves, but it's kind of a lot of the time secondary. So I love that I can just in some little way put them very first, like they're at least my first priority.
Yeah, it's like someone needs to take care of them as well. Yeah, it's so funny. I think, like, it, because it's hard to be selfish. I mean, I think in many different ways, being selfish is not really encouraged by society. Women to be working crazy hours, having the coolest Instagram on the planet, looking amazing so everyone thinks that we're just like the best at CrossFit and the best at eating. But then being selfish and taking time for yourself or doing your own thing, you know, it's like, it's a bit of a dirty word, but I think being selfish is, God, it's so important. And simultaneously hard. And then, yeah, you throw kids in the mix and families. Like, I think we've had quite a few people actually who have either started coaching because they're like, this is the one thing that I can do for myself. Also, we've had a lot of people who've had to leave coaching because they're like, I don't have time. I can't put the energy in. I can't put the money in. And it's like, it's this constant battle, I think, sure with people. But I feel like the people that do it and at the end of it or during it are like, oh man, this is exactly what I needed. Like, I needed to be selfish and figure out how to put myself first. Like you said, you end up filling your cup up and you are so much better for it.
Definitely.
Yeah. So what do you do when you have clients? Like, when you have, I know that you like working with moms. I think we typically work with a lot of women. It's just that we're a woman and we attract women. And women, I think, are good at prioritizing their health. And I think that's part of like recognition to like try to look good all the time throughout our entire lives. So when you have someone come to you, like, I know that on the surface, it looks like people just come to us for nutrition coaching, but oftentimes it turns into a lot more. So what's your approach when people come to you and like, let's say it is a woman and they want to lose 5 kilos and, you know, they've got some kind of event coming up. Like, it's July now, which is wild. And summer is coming in Australia, which means that like weddings are coming. So I think I've had so many people in the past couple of weeks be like, I have a wedding, I have a hen's party, I have this event. And I think everyone's starting to get ready for like, okay, it's time to like lose weight and look good for this thing. How do you tackle that? Because it drives me crazy when people only come because they've been motivated by some like extrinsic event, external event.
I mean, you know, if somebody comes to me and they, you know, yeah, I said, let's do it. Let's go for it. And I do my best to guide, support them, keep them accountable along the way. I think it's really important that when a client comes to me, I'm working with them towards their goals, not my goals for them or what I think they need. It's what their goals are. But I just try to tap in on why they're their goals and get them to understand them like a little bit on a deep level. And then also, you know, I'm pretty upfront from the start that I'm not guaranteeing you results. You might really want to lose weight or like wear a bikini or do whatever it is, like whatever it is, but like signing up for a coach isn't the guarantee for that. And, you know, like I kind of give them a disclaimer at the start. Like I try to scare them off at the start. Like, so if they don't want to, all of the
information. Well, it's expectations, right? Yeah, we're all just being like, hey, fucking all your expectations, throw them out the window because it will not go that way.
Yeah. I know. And that's, and like, you know, and I just, it's like whatever you put in, like, it's like anything in life. Like if you, what you put in, you will get out. But what the thing is, like, I think when people sign up for coaching, what you get out of it, it might be different than what you expected going in. And that's why I think, you know, just being open-minded is something that I encourage in my new clients. And, you know, just being open to it being a journey, not a fixed destination of a wedding or a bikini or 5 kilos or whatever it is. Like that's the direction you want to head in. And for example, like if it's somebody that, you know, because a lot of people do, like they always want to lose five. Everyone wants to lose 5 kilos. Hey,
everyone wants to lose 5 kilos. I've started asking people, no, tell me exactly how much weight you gained and exactly how much weight you, not even what you want to lose. I'm just like, because people are like, I've gained 5 kilos. And I'm like, no. Tell me exactly how much you've gained. Like exactly. Yeah. That's what I need to know. Everyone just generically, continue.
Yeah. Yeah. No, but I'm like, well, okay, but what if, so just like hypothetically, like always, you know, it's when you're having a first conversation with somebody, it's always hypotheticals. Hypothetically, what if your body's not ready to lose 5 kilos yet? Hypothetically, what if you need to slow down and focus on your habits for 2-3 months or however long it takes? What if you need to build your foundation before you worry about those 5 kilos? Like, do you still want those 5 kilos if they're going to happen in 3 months' time? And, you know, like, and if they're important to you, and if it is important to you, like, but it's not the 5 kilos, obviously we know that, like, and I think that you can help your clients understand it's not necessarily the 5 kilos that is the thing that they're chasing, but whatever it is, it should matter to you in 3 months' time. It shouldn't matter. You should still want to put in the work now, even if you're not going to see it for 3 months or 6 months or 12 months or however long it takes. It's not about the, Yeah,
we've talked a ton about redefining what success looks like.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of the coaching that we do is that process of like, hey, you know, you're going to have to work hard. That's the only guarantee here. Like there's no success guarantee, but you will not get success without hard work. Mm-hmm. Simultaneously, hard work doesn't guarantee success. It's like this, this mindfuck, really. But redefining success is a really big one. And I know that you're really good at being like, hey, look at the ways that you're winning. Like, and I think even the way that you just talked about, the way that you begin by being like, no, this is not going to happen the way you think it's going to happen. I always tell people with like a timeline, anyone who has an arbitrary date, I'm like, triple your timeline. If you think it's going to take 5 weeks to lose 5 kilos, it's actually going to take 15 weeks, maybe longer. It's like, I just think changing expectations, redefining what success looks like. And you said it really nicely. You're like, they think it's the weight, but it's often something else. And I know that you're really good at getting to like, kind of getting to the heart of the matter and getting to what's really going on.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's what people get out of it, right? Like how many people have you had start the program being like, I want to lose 5 kilos and then end the program with some completely different experience?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've got one client at the moment who I think, you know, signed up with some weight loss goals, but some other things. And we've just gone about going through the process, working on the journey. And like we came back and I think we're, I don't know, 10, 12, I don't know how many weeks in we are. And we're like, oh, we're 8 kilos down on the scales. And then we looked at the photos and we're like, oh, wow, look at these great changes, because we've been so focused on how she's feeling. And I think, you know, it's a bonus. Like that 8 kilos and feeling and like looking like freaking amazing in like, you know, the progress photos, that's just an added bonus to how well she's going with everything else. And I think that's where I ultimately want my clients to get to. Like that's where you want them to be. Hey, because like just totally invested in feeling amazing. So your body's just coming Which along for the ride sense. And doing what it, and it's where it is based on you fueling yourself and nourishing yourself and doing all those great things.
Yeah, your body is just a reflection of, a delayed reflection of what your behavior is. So yeah. It's like, as much as people look at a body or think about what they used to look like and they want to get back to that or whatever it is, it's like that's just wanting that isn't going to produce the change. It's the behavior. So if the behavior is being motivated by feeling crap, being unhappy, being in a shitty relationship, having a shitty job, being stressed to the max, not sleeping, then of course you're going to get the results that reflect that. So rather than focusing on like, okay, well, I want to be shredded. I want to have this 5 kilos gone. I want to whatever. It's like, if you can just focus on the behavior, the body will eventually reflect that.
100%. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Just, you know, what's missing at the moment. And usually it's something really boring and hard to buy into when all you're thinking about is 5 kilos or 10 kilos or whatever it is, when what you need to be thinking of is, oh, I don't eat enough food. I keep skipping breakfast. I don't have enough protein. Like I'm eating out too much. Like all these things that kind of just sound really boring, or like, you know, drinking enough water, going to bed on time. Like, why do I need to pay somebody to tell me that?
Right. Yeah. It's literally, it's like, it's never groundbreaking. It's just, I think that's the, I guess having a coach, it's like, sometimes you have all the information, but implementing it is hard and being consistent and you need the accountability and you need the, you know, I think in terms of like success, having the support, just having someone who's there to be like, hey, you're still doing a good job. Remember, like you're doing really well and this is really good effort. And like, I know that you're not where you wanted to be, or you're not seeing the results in the way you thought you were going to see them. But like, man, you just need to keep showing up. And that's what sometimes our job is, just to remind them that it's like, hey, this is just a process. This is just a process and you take it one day at a time and that's all we can do.
You keep going.
Yeah, it's like, just keep going. Like, I'm pretty sure I have almost all of my clients at some point, I'm like, just keep going. Good job. That's like, that's pretty much, if you could put my chicken response to them into like 3 words, it's just keep going. Like, you're doing everything right. Keep going.
Yeah.
So obviously, like, there are people that are presenting with some really big challenges or even some small challenges, and sometimes they need the same things. Like you just said, it's sometimes the unsexy stuff is quite simple and we just need to be consistent. Have there been any really big challenges that you've had?
As a coach?
Yeah, like with particular clients that they've come to you with something that was really hard, or yeah, just anything that you feel like has been a long journey.
Yeah, I mean, of course, like I've had challenging clients. Like, I'm really like, a lot of those challenging clients end up being the most rewarding. Like, I think, and the way that I manage those clients has changed a lot over the years. Like, definitely not trying to be, you know, trying to wear too many hats, making sure that they're getting all of the support they need, like therapy or, you know, making sure they're seeing doctors or like all of that sort of stuff. Like, I think, you know, definitely knowing my scope of practice and sticking with that makes me confident to deal with, you know, like all of the challenges that, and like, which is, there's so many that come, like, but I think the biggest thing that's shifted in over the years has been, and like, I guess the challenge I've had to overcome was just my own like confidence and belief that I was a good coach. Like that was something that I think that I needed to do. And that took me a while. And honestly, like without you and Kayla, like, I don't know how I would have got there. Like, I can't imagine being the coach I am today without you two. And I think
it's funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just thinking yesterday, I was like, thank God Kayla asked me to coach.
What?
This has become kind of my life and my world. It's funny. So I think confidence is one of those like key things, confidence and experience. Because I don't know if there's, I guess there is, like, I coach very differently now. I'm much better at telling the truth and being very, very direct and clear, because I can see what's going on better. I think sometimes when you're newer to coaching, it takes longer for you to see exactly what's happening, maybe. Yeah. What are the things that you feel like now as a coach? And I know that we've actually done this exercise with the CFK coaches. I've asked them what they're good at. And it's a really hard question to answer. And I know that I've asked you this before. Hey. I know it is. It's like, oh man, I know what I'm not good at. Like, I'm really good at critiquing myself just the same way that, you know, our clients do. So tell me now, like, when you started coaching, this is what you do now. Like, I know confidence and experience are big factors. Yeah. Do you have little things that you're like, oh no, I'm really good at that now?
I think I'm really good at not giving like the superfluous information, not overboard it, like just giving people actually what they need and not trying to, like, because I remember, like, I think I used to always just try and over deliver so much just to give people as much value, because I was like, I just wanted to, you know, so I would just go completely overboard with, you know, trying to give them information and education and like that sort of stuff. And then but now I think, you know, I keep it very much, like, I'm very much a lot better at keeping things in line with what each individual client needs. And yeah, I don't know. You know, I suck at this. I don't know what I think. It's like I have this overall, like, I'm pretty confident that I'm a good coach, and that if you come in, like, and if I work with somebody, that I'm going to get really good things out of them and have a good, and they're going to have a good experience. But I don't know what I'm actually good at.
I think for me, like, I know, you know, when people used to come to me and I hadn't done that much coaching, they would come to me and I would be unsure of their journey. Now, when they come to me, it's almost like I can see and map out what's going to happen based on the kind of person they are and maybe what they've done in their first couple of weeks. Do you feel like you have that experience now where you can kind of, like, it's almost like the further out you can see what happens for them is reflective of how much experience you've had, I guess?
Yeah, I think and it's easier to sort of anticipate what each client needs. Like, obviously, like, everyone starts with a blank slate, but it's kind of like, okay, cool, like, you know, without having as much information or as much time with them, you kind of get a better pitch sense of where they're at, what their life looks like, and how you can, what you can offer them to help them move forward towards their goals. Like, yeah. So, or like what they need, like if, you know, if they do need to, you know, just work on habits, or if they do need to reverse diet, or if they're just, you know, they're lacking support or that sort of stuff. Like, you kind of know where you need to, jump in and provide the most support, I guess.
Yeah, we even talk about, like, we discuss the rough patch and the rough patch recovery that we have, and we, like, I mean, it's almost like a selling point now where people are like, or you talk to people about the minimum time frame and we're like, well, it's 12 weeks, and we deliberately want it to be like, I almost want to make it 6 months. I was talking to my business mentor and I'm like, I kind of want it to be a 6 month minimum, because 3 months you get a little foundation, you get a bit of a base, you get on a bit of a roll, but people are playing out in their brains like, okay, I'm going to get 12 weeks and then I'm done. So they kind of just like ride it out a little bit sometimes. And I'm like, I wish I could make it, like, one of my friends has a 9 month minimum and I'm like, oh, that's so good. I wish it was a little bit longer, because what happens is sometimes you get shit come up in 12 weeks, but the longer you're with someone, the more stuff comes up. And it's like, you need those shit moments where life just throws you a curveball, because that's when we, like you said, can anticipate the challenge. And that's where coaches kind of work magic. And the reality is that the environment is sometimes going to create a space for people to do really well. And it's not until that environment's thrown off that suddenly they're tested. I think what you said, anticipating it, right? Like, we can kind of anticipate that something's going to go wrong at some point. And the longer they're with us, the more that that's going to happen. And the more that we're going to have this chance to practice. What do we do then? What do we do when things aren't good? And that's when the nutrition happens.
Yeah. Or when that initial burst of motivation that everybody starts with starts to wane. And that's when, like,
yes.
the the real habits and the real challenges, or like the stuff that they really need to work on, that's when that starts to show up, I think.
So I know that you said that the people that have been most challenging are often the people that are the most rewarding. Now, what are they doing that's different? Because we also have clients that have a really challenging time and they walk away. Like they don't stay around. Like they don't open up. They can't prioritize this thing. Like you said, motivation wanes and they suddenly are like, this isn't the right time. And there's a shift in mindset. The people that stay, what is it that they're doing differently? Like I know, I think for me, I'm always encouraging people to just be super fucking honest about the struggle. Like just talk about it. Even if you feel like you've made no progress that week, I'm like, just check in and tell me about the lack of progress and why you didn't have it, because then we can actually do something about it. Even if it means that nothing changes that week, that's the information that we need. Is that what you find is the difference?
100%. Like, I think by far, like if I was to look back and like the clients that have seen the most success or had the best results or had the best time or stuck with it, they don't miss their check-ins. They show up, like, and like that's kind of like the biggest thing that they need to do for this process is show up every week and talk and be open and honest. Like they kind of I think the other thing is they let go of that short-term focus and they like start to recognize the smaller changes that are happening and start to and folk can see the mindset shifts or the habit shifts. They can recognize, like, you know, just the little, like they can focus more on how like other measures of progress rather than necessarily the one that they signed up for, like the most I think, and when I say successful clients, I don't mean the ones that perform the best or have the most weight loss. I think the ones that, when I say successful clients, I think I'm talking about the ones that I know are getting a lot out of the process, you know what I mean? Like it's like they show up every week, they check in, they give themselves a break. Like they're okay with slow progress. They, focus on the daily things that they need to do and the actions and the behaviors and not the end result.
It's almost like they accept the struggle. Like they accept the imperfectness of it.
They embrace the process and they recognize that it's a lifetime thing, not a 12-week thing.
When people let go of the end point, it's like you can release a lot of that pressure to do really well and make sure that you like nail it. It's like, nah, man, this is life. Like food is a forever thing. That's got to be one of my favorite phrases. I think it's from Jordan Syatt. Food is a forever thing.
Yeah. Jordan, so true.
Yeah.
I think, I think because, I don't know. I had something and then I lost it. Sorry.
Yeah, it's interesting seeing the difference between people who are successful and people that are not successful, because what you just said was beautiful. It's actually dependent on our definition of success, because I think the people that walk away are the people that feel like they're getting success because they feel like they're struggling and suddenly that means something about them. And it's like, we're so afraid of showing our struggle and showing us going through it and not being the perfect version of the person that we thought we were going to be through the process. And the people that are actually okay with being like, I fucked up and this is really hard. And then just try and like keep swimming, just keep swimming. Like just you'll get there if you just keep swimming. Like, cause there's like the hill climb and then there's the descent afterwards. And then there'll be another hill and then there'll be another descent. But yeah, it's interesting to observe different people going through that. And I think sometimes you get people that have kind of done that with other people, like other coaches, and tried to do that process, and then they get to you and figured out that it's okay to struggle. It's almost like what you and I have gone through. It's like through my 20s, like doing all this stuff and it not being perfect. So me being like, fuck it, throw it away and I'll do the next thing. And then it wasn't until I realized I'd done that so many times that I was like, okay, I'm going to do one thing and I'm just going to keep trying, even if I fuck it up. It's like, it's almost like a great analogy is thinking about your first day at work. Like even your first 6 months at a new job, it's like you kind of get a pass for fucking up, for not knowing how to do shit, for being the rookie, for asking a ton of questions, for being the student, and just like kind of like figuring out on the fly a little bit. Like you can't be expected to know what you're doing on the first day. Like you just cannot. It's impossible. And so we seem to give ourselves that ability to just learn as we go when we're in a new job environment. But then suddenly when it comes to anything else, especially diet, it's like, if I don't get it right from day one, then I'm throwing it all away.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, so I know that we've talked about quite a few things in terms of like your experience and your experience as a coach, like your experience personally and your experience as a coach. In terms of like the motivation that you see people come in with, I feel like you're quite intrinsically motivated. And I think a lot of people come in because they're extrinsically motivated. They've got other things that they're focusing on. How do you get someone to shift that? Like, how do you, what's that, what does that look like? How did you do it?
I mean, look, I don't think that there's anything wrong with using short-term extrinsic motivation. Like, I think, you know, it doesn't have to be, you don't have to start off being intrinsically motivated, or like, it's okay to kind of use it to bounce to sort of in the short term. Like, when motivation is around, it's amazing and you should utilize it. Don't just like discard it. Like, I mean, at the moment I'm doing a pairs CrossFit comp in a few weeks, and it's like the second, in-person CrossFit comp I've ever done. So, and it's the first pairs competition I've ever done. So I'm very extrinsically motivated in my training right now, not to embarrass myself and also not to let my
partner. just fair is driving you, fair is pushing you. You're like, oh. Can you explain intrinsic motivation versus extrinsic motivation for people who've not heard those terms before?
Oh, okay. So like your intrinsic motivation, that's coming, that's like internally, that's your, I guess that's like your drive. That's what's, you're going to do it regardless of what's happening in the outside world. You know, whereas your external motive, extrinsic motivation, it's your external sources. It's your 5 kilos, it's your CrossFit comps. It's all of like those kind of things. And like, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, like you can use that extrinsic or those external motivation sources, but if that's all you've got, if that's all you ever do, if that's the only thing that motivates you, eventually going to run out of comps and challenges, and then what are you left with? Like, not a lot. And that's, I think, you know, where people see, like, go through like those, you know, ups and downs with their food and their fitness when they're only extrinsically motivated. So I think personally, do you want me to talk about where extrinsically I can keep that motivation going regardless? Like, yeah, like I'm using that extrinsic motivation at the moment, but I'd kind of be doing, but that's just to push me a little bit harder, especially in my training at the moment. But I'd still be training anyway, because intrinsically I'm motivated, like, by knowing why I do these things. And like, I think, and that's the other important thing to tap into your extrinsic motivation, is to get to your deeper why, and like, know what, like, you, like your deeper purpose.
What
and
is
value
your why? What is your like big why?
It's okay. Well, so basically never to die, to be healthy.
I want to be immortal.
Basically,
how old do you think you're going to be when you die? Like, what age do you want to live to?
I'm not talking about it, Kate, because I'm so scared of dying.
I reckon that, so I want to live till I'm like at least 110, maybe 120.
I don't know how old I live to, but when I'm 100, when I'm 110, I want to be, you know, healthy, and I want to be living independent. Yeah. And I think that's what drives me today, and that's what, like, I guess it actually means something to me, like, because, and it overrides, like, you know, when I am having a bad body image day, or maybe I'm tempted to do, like, I would never do anything now, like the, like who I am now, like I would never do anything to compromise my long-term health, because it means more to me than looking a certain way or anything like that. So I use that, because it, yeah, even though it's like a long way away, when I talk about it, I'm like, oh no, it's really important. Like, I don't want
to. It's
die.
Almost like you have to find, yeah, you have to like find reminders. And I think people talk about that, right? It's like, remember that you will one day die. Like, and people get old. Like, I love looking at, and I know this sounds super creepy, I really enjoy seeing old people, because it's such a good reminder of like where we're all heading, you know. And I think I even went to the CrossFit Masters course years ago at CrossFit Brisbane. And it's like, he nails it when he opens that seminar, Matt Swift. He's like, man, a lot of people are focused on CrossFit kids and CrossFit teens, which is cool. But where are they all heading? Like, we're all going to be CrossFit Masters athletes one day. We're all going there. The teens, the kids, the normal, like open category, we're all eventually going to be Masters athletes. We need to know how to deal with those people. But I like that. I like looking at older people and being like, oh, that's where we're all heading. Like, oh my God, we are going to be old. And having that reminder, because you forget about it, right? Like, it's so easy to forget.
That's definitely what pushes
that's the
me.
Why.
That's my why.
Live forever.
Forever.
I think you said it really nicely, though. It's like, you know, at whatever age you get to, being there and having a high quality of life, you know, it's like you can see people that are 80 that are living in a retirement village that are hooked up to tubes and need assistance going to the bathroom and can't do anything for themselves and have their food brought to them and have people come and visit their bedside. Like, or you can have someone who's 80. Like, my granddad just turned 90, is turning 92 this year, I think. 92? Yeah. And he still goes out skiing in winter with my family. It's like, it's wild. It's so cool. And it's like, I don't think a lot of his friends are doing that. He has to come with his kids because he's got no friends to do that with anymore. Like, it's, I think it becomes very obvious who made decisions earlier on in their life. You get to that age that supports that quality of life.
And I think as well, like, it just makes you, like, when you are focused on that longevity, it makes you realize that your health is actually a gift. It's not a guarantee. So, like, obviously, like, there could be any number of things that could happen that are going to get in the way of my plans to live forever, but that doesn't mean that I can't do the thing, like, control my things that I can do. Like, and that's a big
part of that. It's like, that's the controllable part.
Yeah. All the other things is my diet, like, and my lifestyle. And then the other stuff I just have to deal with when it comes. But, like, if I focus on eating well, keeping my body and my mind healthy, then I'm doing what I can to, you know, keep my body going and live forever.
That's so
silly saying that.
So, did you ever watch Greg Glassman's video on the 5 buckets of death?
No.
Because what you just said is pretty much the whole video. He talks about 5 buckets of death, and they all start with, like, like a T or like a letter. And basically he walks through, and I'm just going to tell everyone, I'll put the link in the episode website or whatever, the show notes. he talks through these 5 different ways that we can die, and essentially what happens is 4 out of the 5 buckets are out of our control: a car crash, a pandemic, you know, like some kind of, like, toxin, like some poison, something. They're all out of our control. We cannot do anything to stop them. They're coming whether we like it or not. Okay. We don't know when it's going to happen, and there's nothing that we can do about it. In fact, it serves us better to live life like it's never going to happen. But there is the 5th bucket, and the 5th bucket is your health and your general well-being. And we can actually control that. And that determines a lot about, you know, what happens later on in life, which is not dying. So that's a really cool video that I think everybody should go and watch. And it hits home because you go, oh yeah, all these things that you could be worrying about actually don't matter. The only thing that we should really focus on in terms of, like, not dying is what we're eating and how we're moving our body and stress and the stuff that we're doing day to day. So I think sometimes it kind of takes a coach to remind people of, like, what the big why is, and even ask that question of, like, hey, what is your why? A lot of people probably haven't even answered that question. Is that your process when you're coaching people? Do you ask people what their why is, and do you, like, remind them of that stuff? Is that what you typically find you do to get people to go from extrinsic to intrinsic quite fluidly and seamlessly?
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty I don't have, like, a set process that I go through with my clients. I treat every single one of them completely individually. Usually over the course of coaching it does come up. For a lot of people, like, it will come up early, like, and I've got, like, the 5 whys exercise, which I love. And I think that's a really good one that I like to send to people to do if I feel like they're struggling with they seem like they don't have like a real understanding of what they're doing, and perhaps, and that can show itself. I think like in clients, like when they don't have that deeper understanding of why they want the things that they want, it reflects itself in like their consistency or like they find things like harder, like it's like sticking to things, just implementing things, like just changing things. And I think a lot of that, so, you know, when I see that in clients, that kind of, that will often signal, oh, we should do this. Or if they go, or if like they come to me with a new goal, or like we start a new phase or a new focus, I'm like, okay, but before we get started on this, let's really get into why. And like, and I, yeah, so yeah, no, it's definitely something that will come up over at different times with all of my clients, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the why is hard to verbalize for sure. Like that's why I wanted to ask you what your why was. I think my why is quite similar. It's like, just be able to wipe my own butt forever. Like that's the goal. Be able to ski in winter and not have someone help me go to the toilet. yeah. And I think that becomes quite powerful. And I think when you know what that is, you almost make it become extrinsic. In a weird way, I don't know if this is going to make any sense, but when you can visualize what that is, being helped off the toilet, not being able to go to the grocery store, yeah. not being able to travel. Like I remember reading a post of a woman who was like, this is probably the last time I'll ever be at the ocean, because she lived quite a far away and she was getting to a point where she couldn't drive. She couldn't really travel. And it was like, I'm going to see the ocean for the last time today. And you're like, oh, fuck, that's really, it hits deep.
Yeah.
And I think when you can really imagine that, suddenly it becomes powerful. And as much as it's still intrinsic, it almost feels like the same experience as the extrinsic motivation of having a deadline, like a comp or a wedding or yeah. whatever that you want to lose weight for, you want to look good for, you want to get fit for, or whatever it is. I think if you can make that why clear and say it out loud and really imagine what would happen if you didn't do the health thing and didn't take care of yourself, it's like, oh man, that becomes the scariest thing of them all. You know, it's like, yeah.
Yeah. Like my heart rate's up a little bit from talking about it. Like I can, you know, cause yeah, you imagine, oh, like, yeah. Like, am I doing the things that are going to help me the most towards that? Like it does feel, yeah, like it does feel relevant, and even though it's, yeah. you know, a long time in the future.
Yeah, and that's it, right? Like being clear on like why you're doing it, what's going to happen, what will happen yeah. if you don't do it, and you realize that the cost of not doing it is so high that it's right. like it propels you to take action immediately.
Yeah, it is kind of like, okay, yeah, like because you can ask yourself like, well, if I do, because everything has a cost, right? Like there's like the cost benefit of everything. And like, that's another big thing to, you know, to consider when you've got a goal. Like, are you willing to, you're not going to get it without sacrificing something. You're not going to get it without a cost. Like you have to, it doesn't matter what that goal is there. It's not going to come through without any sacrifice or any compromise.
Mm. Yeah. And I guess it's like, that's it. You realize that while we think it's like sacrifice or compromise right now, what it is it's making a compromise / sacrifice now so that we don't sacrifice that long-term thing.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like you're actually just picking which sacrifice you want. Like, do you want to sacrifice the chocolate and the late nights now? Or, and in which case you'd be sacrificing, let me say this properly. Do you want the chocolate in the late nights now and sacrifice your long-term health? Or are you willing to sacrifice the chocolate and the late nights and the not training and the not whatever in order to have this great, in order to be in a great place when you're older?
Yeah.
It's like, you just pick which sacrifice it is. It's like, you're not choosing the right way or the way to win. It's like, you're just choosing which bad thing you don't want. Like,
yeah. And obviously, like, you know, when you're focusing on the goal of like being really healthy when you're older, you can have some late nights and some chocolate. That's fine. When you've got a goal to lose, if you've got a weight loss goal, for example, or you've got the goal to, you know, like a serious performance goal, like you're trying to train to be at the CrossFit Games, you're probably going to need less Like, you know, it's more important to have less nights, late nights or drinking or chocolate or whatever it is in the short term so you can work towards that goal. Like, it's like the closer the goal is, the often the more sacrifices you kind of have to be prepared to make.
Yeah, it's so interesting thinking about sacrifice. Like, it sounds like a bad thing, right? Like, sacrifice, it always has these like kind of negative connotations. But I think when you can get the right perspective, it's actually no, sacrifice is exactly what's required, and you want to be making sacrifice, because then you know you're doing the things you need to do. So if you can view sacrifice as a good thing, then you're going to enjoy that process a little bit more. I wanted to ask you, I actually wanted to ask you about, we've been talking about social media with all of our coaches and like how we can use it and the ways that we can share what we're doing and our stories and basically like have a voice and a presence and let people know who we are. And one of the things that you put today was, it was like FDOE, and I had to go on Google and I was like, what is that? Full day of eating. So it actually, I have a question for you about like the way that you eat and train and stuff. And I don't want to make it just a day. How do you map out like a week? Like, in terms of, do you eat more restricted or more strictly during the week, and then weekends are a little bit more flexible? Like, how do you map out a week with your training and your eating? What does it look like?
Okay, so I mean, definitely at the moment, like, I mean, I've gone through some pretty big changes this year. I'm a little bit out of routine, but I'm still, I mean, as far as my training goes, that's pretty easy. Like, I follow a program, so I generally train 5-6 days a week. I have one.
Oh yeah, do you do classes, or do you do your own programming in between classes?
I've been doing a mix this year, but I've just gone straight back to sticking to my program. So I'm not doing classes at the moment. Like, I jump in, we've got like at my gym in the afternoons, we do like a bit of a endurance workouts, like a couple. So I'll do that with the guys. But generally, like, for my training at the moment, I'm not doing any classes. But generally for my food, I have the same thing for breakfast, working like 6 days a week, honestly. Like, one day
I should be a rule. I think we should. I think when people start, we should just be like, you're just going to pick what you have for breakfast, make your ideal breakfast. You can do that every single day. It just makes life so simple.
I know. Like, when you shared the overnight Weet-Bix and I've been seeing it, I'm like, I should try that. I can have some Weet-Bix. I should do it. And then I get to, I'm like, but what if it's not as good as my oats?
You know? I'm out of routine though. Like, literally, I'm just thinking in my brain right now, I'm like, when I'm not eating breakfast the same thing consistently at the same time, it's actually a little like red flag for me of like, I'm not in a routine right now. I'm a little bit all over the shop. Same thing with like even training. I've missed a couple morning sessions and had to go to the afternoon sessions. Okay, so you have the same breakfast every day. What is it?
Pretty much same breakfast: oats, almond milk, yogurt, fruit, bit of nut butter, usually peanut butter, and like some seeds. Pretty much like 5-6 days a week I have that. Some days I'll have like eggs, avocado, ham, and like a piece of fruit.
I've seen that one.
If I'm feeling
what's your stance on dairy?
I don't have an issue. I don't tend to eat a lot of it, just because it does make me feel a little bit heavy. It just, I don't know. It's just personal. Like, I eat like cheese, I eat yogurt, I eat whey protein, but I don't drink milk anymore. That's like, and that is reminiscent of my whole 30 days, because the one thing that's stuck. So is I love black coffee now. Like, I love it.
I've never been able to get to that point.
I love it.
Yeah. I've done it once and it didn't last. So Greg's been seeing a nutrition coach that's local in Newcastle, and it's great. He's like, hey, I want you to have a little bit of dairy every day, because it actually provides your gut with some variety of like bacteria that if you're not eating any dairy, one, you become more sensitive to dairy, and two, you may not have the kind of variance in your gut microbiome that you want for it to function happily and optimally. That's breakfast. Then what?
Lunch, I tend to try and have, and this is really boring, like, I have the same thing for lunch every day. I try to like, and I prep that in advance. So that's just ready to go. So I generally, and like, I'll change that up week to week. And that's where you'll see a lot of like my salmon bowls or my burrito bowls. It's always in, and it's always in the same bowl. I love my bowl. But yeah, so like, I tend to just keep my breakfast and my lunch and then even my snacks, because all of my snacks tend to be eaten around workouts, the same. And keep in mind, this is when my weeks are going smooth, which not a lot of them have been lately because I've been traveling and moving around a lot. But yeah, so generally that's what happens. And then dinner, I like to just, I don't tend to, like, I kind of have an idea of what I'm having for dinner, like 5 nights of the week, and shop for that. I like to do one big shop a week. I don't like doing lots of little ones. That doesn't work for me. So,
Yeah.
but
Is
I
that the
will
same for
change.
meal prep?
No, I'll, the only thing I'm, the only thing that I meal prep is my lunches. That's the only
Yeah,
thing I
okay, I
meal prep.
see.
And it's always a really simple thing, like that I'm prepping for that. So, and then
And
my
so do you do
dinners.
that all in one go?
Yeah, I try to do that on Sunday, or it'll at least be like 3 to 4 days. And then towards the end, I
Yeah.
might be having extra, like I'll make, if I don't have my lunch prepped, then it's like dinner for lunch, which I just find is the easiest. Yeah. And then dinners, again, like I kind of have an idea of what I'm having across the week, but then because I do have the luxury of having time to cook in the evening, so I'm fine with that. Like, and the stuff that I'm cooking doesn't take, it usually takes 20 to 30 minutes, so I'm happy with that. And then weekends, I'm a little bit more, just see how I feel, but it tends to almost be the same depending on where I'm at. Yeah,
How
like I'll
much
eat
do you eat
out
out?
lately a lot more than I necessarily want to be, but just because I've have been traveling a lot more and away from home. But generally, like twice a week is like once or twice a week. Sometimes I'll have breakfast out. Sometimes, like I'll have dinner out one night, or get to, just get takeaway or something like that. But yeah, like cooking isn't, it's not a chore for me. I don't mind it, and I do. It's yeah, it's not a big thing that I struggle with, like wanting to cook. Like I'm happy to do it, so that's not one of my challenges.
Have you always enjoyed cooking?
Yeah. I used to really like cooking, like spending hours in the kitchen and cooking really complicated things. Now it's like
Oh,
nothing I cook takes more than 20 minutes. Like I used to do everything. Like I used to like want to make my own pastas and pastries and like do all of these
Oh, no
crazy things.
way.
Yeah. So that I used to love doing that. Like I think like when, yeah, especially like when my kids were younger, like I just wanted to make everything and loved just being in the kitchen. 'Cause you're at home a lot more when your kids are younger. So like, so I could be in the kitchen. Like now they're older and like grown up, and like I've got more of my like I get to decide how I want to spend all of my time, and I don't tend to want to spend it all in the kitchen.
That's
So I just,
fair. Nice.
yeah.
How much do you drink?
How much do I drink?
Like alcohol.
Or like maybe it depends on what's going on, like what's happening in my life. Again, probably lately a little bit more because I've had a lot of like more social events on, which is fun and I'm actually really enjoying, but generally 0 to 2 drinks maybe. Like most weeks I'd have none or like one or two, and then if I'm going out for dinner or I'm having a social, I don't drink just for the sake of having a drink. I don't feel the need to. I don't, it's not part of like something that I need to do for enjoyment or to wind down or whatever like that. It's more of a social thing for me.
I think I'm the same. So, maybe last question for you. I was interested in knowing, are you tracking at the moment or are you not tracking?
I'm fluctuating between tracking and not tracking. but again, like I mean, I do. Like I think again, like because I am spending a lot of time away from home and moving in and out of things and like and different focuses. So I think at the moment, especially like for a couple of weeks ago, I was thinking, oh, I do want to focus a little bit more on like body composition and aesthetics. And I know to do that, I see the best results when I'm tracking. And then I just got to a point where I'm like, well, I also have signed up for like all of these like these competitions and things that are going to require me to be performing my best. So necessarily focusing on my aesthetics right now isn't probably the best approach. My best approach is to stick to the habits that I know work for me, fuel my body well, and perform my best. And I know that when I do that anyway, like, you know, and it'll probably mean doing things like cutting back how much I'm eating out, not drinking, cutting back that down even a little bit less. But I find that, I can perform well, feel my body, and do all the things I need to be doing without tracking now. But if I do have like goals around weight loss or aesthetics, then I'll always go back to tracking because I feel like that's where I see the best results and the fastest results. You can get in and out.
How much of the tracking versus not tracking?
I spent a good 5 years probably tracking 90% of the year. Now I probably track a quarter to a third of it.
I tend
to track a couple of days. Like even when I'm going through a phase of not tracking, I'll track a random day every week or a week every month just to see where I'm at and make sure I'm like, just to see where I'm at. But generally,
that's where I kind of want all of our clients to get to. Like that would be really cool for everyone to be like, I just track a day here and there to see if I'm
hitting. But right? Know where you're at. So, I mean, but seriously, I did it for 5 years straight.
So figure it out, hey. You figure out the quantity thing quickly. What are your maintenance calories? What's your maintenance range?
2,300-ish calories. Around about that.
And what's your deficit that you usually go to?
I can't go lower than 1,900. I've tried and I can do it for a day and then it just doesn't end well. I don't feel well.
Keep going.
Yeah. So that's, yeah, like I tend to just be able to, for a deficit, stick around 2,000, and that seems to be a good zone for me. And I can sustain that. And if I do that, change it up a little bit depending on how I'm responding. But I've found always in the past around about 2,000 calories is a good amount for me to sort of keep going with what I want to be doing and see results.
Yeah. And then what's your surplus? What would you eat in a competition?
I haven't competed enough to go through that phase yet, Kate.
Oh, the comp that you've coming up, is it 1 day or 2 day?
It's 1 day.
How many events are there?
I don't know, 4 or 5.
Oh, you're going to have so much fun eating. Competitions are great. Here's the interesting thing about competitions. Oftentimes the quantity of food increases, but the quality of food has to decrease. And that's typically just what we do. Yeah, it's you just have to get in volume of food. And there's always an interesting conversation around CrossFit Games athletes eat shit food because they just need fuel. And it's you need to look at the context. Is it just for that weekend or is it across the board? They always eat like that because I don't believe that they always eat like that. And two, I often think that people believe that they can just eat like that because that will produce the same results. Mm. And I heard a really nice phrase from actually the guy that Greg's working with at the moment for nutrition. And he was like, those top athletes perform well in spite of their diet, not because of their diet. Fucking in spite of it, because they're genetically gifted. They've been training for years in terms of their athlete age and their competition age. They're very mature and they know how to perform. And it's a lot of it is psychological. So what happens is they're actually performing in spite of a shitty diet, and they can probably squeeze more out by having a better diet, by eating better quality foods in different amounts and playing with that and really tailoring it. But I definitely know that for me, competition weekends is like, okay, well, I'm going to be trying to hit 3,000 calories. I actually stopped tracking. I just know how to eat enough food. So it's never been, it's never been a hard thing for me.
No, I've never had the problem of eating enough food.
Oh, well, that's going to be fun that you're going to have your competition. So we'll make this the last thing. Okay. Do you have a plan for it then in terms of your eating for this competition? Do you have a rough plan that you're going to follow through for that weekend?
I mean, yeah, I do. And I've done enough.
You've coached millions of people through competitions, so.
Yeah. Hopefully. Definitely. I know what I'm going to do. Like, I think it'll be, yeah, the same approach that I've worked with other people on. It's just, and similar to, like, you know, when I've done, you know, like online quarterfinals or like, you know, obviously, like,
yeah,
that sort of thing. Like, and like, you know, like I've done enough endurance event. Like, I know how to, I think I know what I'm doing. I think I got it.
Okay. Okay. Give us the plan.
Okay. So, well, I'll be having my oats for breakfast, kind of timing.
What
them.
About the day before? What are you doing the day before? Are you going to eat more?
Carbs, lots of carbs. I'll be eating more. I'll probably be eating more like for the week out. Like, I'll probably be
interesting. Yeah. Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For the week out, definitely drinking more water. Getting it. Like a lot more like volume. As like calories, that sort of stuff. Day of. I'll try and time my breakfast. So I usually, I like to have my oats. If I can eat them before training, like 2-3 hours out, like that's a really good time for me. I'll then also try and time some caffeine and, more quickly digestible carbs, like in that sort of hour before the first event, in between events
What's your go-to quickly digestible carb? Are you
depends.
A bread girl or like cereal? Yeah.
I'm like crumpet, honey, anything with honey, bananas, tortillas, baby food, fruit, like that sort of stuff. In between events, would just be more of those sort of carbs, a little bit of protein. I'll probably have some lollies, but what I tend to see with clients is like when in between events, don't have the lollies the whole way through. Just have them like in that 20-minute window and try and get some actual food in, like in that, like in between. So you're not just sort of, you know, riding that, the blood sugar crashes and waves all day. So like lollies are good on comp day, but try and keep 20 minutes out from the event. In between,
I have to say experimenting with fat takes being quite good for me with competitions, because I think that's it. It's like you can have a shit ton of carbs, but it messes up with your energy a little bit. I've always enjoyed having a little bit more fat.
Yeah, see, I always, well, I don't know, because I think we've had chats about this. Like, I definitely prefer carbs more than fats. Like, I think when we look at our diets, like mine's higher carb, yours is higher fat. Like, I think we've had that chat before. But I'll definitely, like, I think bookending my fats, like, but there'll definitely be some in breakfast, but then loading up with them at night, because I know, like, it's really important for recovery. And, like, some, like, I'm not going, like, there might be a little bit more during the day, but I won't be trying to get, like, I won't specifically be trying to eat a lot of fat during the day, but maybe I should. I don't know. This is my, this is only my second full day comp. So,
well, this is, it's like this one's the trial one. And then the next one, you might try something different. And that's what I tell people. I'm like, hey, we'll do it like this for this one. And then the next one, we'll do peanut
well, that's,
or whatever it is. Add in.
Yeah, that's why as well, like, especially like when clients first start competing, I tend to get them to even though like tracking's not super important, but I'll get them to track, even if it's after the fact, what they've done for that comp, just so we can then go back and look and just reflect on how did it go, like did this work for you, and what was how can we make you feel better, and then tweaking the foods that for the next one that way.
I get people to pre-enter it. I've actually pre-entered people's competition food before. I did that when I was working with Alison Scuds. I think I did it for Noah Olsen as well. And then Alison Scuds' boyfriend. And I know that he still uses his like comp weekend meal prep, because I just filled it in.
Yeah.
Which I don't like doing, because I'm always like, I eat weird stuff. I'll just put in what I would eat. It's really plain shit. But like, it's just, it means that you know how to hit exactly the calories and the ratios of macros. But
Well,
I think that's a really useful tool.
Yeah. I just did that recently with a client. She was competing at a comp. And I got her she entered in everything the night before, and then like I just logged into her account and could then look in and just see, not only what her totals were, but what foods she was eating. And like, and we did tweak it a little bit, and it worked quite well. But yeah, I think.
Which is good, because then you also have like your list of foods for the day, and you don't need to try and enter or track as you go. You just pack those foods throughout the day, you just eat them.
But then, once you know what's working, you can just be gone with the app and do what, is effective for you.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. The app, the tracking is such a great tool. Okay, cool, man. We've covered a lot. We've been through a lot of topics. This has been good.
Okay. Thanks.
I think we did really well. I think one day what would be really cool is like, because when it's live on YouTube, people can actually write in comments and we can see them. So like on your screen, StreamYard, there's that like comment thing area. And so that's live comments on YouTube. So eventually, and this is like what I've seen on other people's podcasts when I used to do like the Savan podcast, people just like, there's like a whole different conversation happening in the comment section that like sometimes is relevant to the conversation and sometimes isn't. And it's really interesting. You get interesting questions and people making like contributing in interesting ways with odd facts and random stuff. But yeah, I think eventually what will happen is we'll be like, I won't even need to ask questions because people will be like, hey Paige, I have this thing that I need to ask you. So I think that's eventually what will happen. But I mean, we ended up going into tangents. All right, guys. Thank you so much. Paige, you're the best. Thank you for jumping on this. First one down, we'll schedule another podcast soon. It'll be fun.
Thanks for having me.
All right.